Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley. It's Election Day, and we're going to be talking about that almost the entire hour. But first, brought to you by the Committee to Elect Matt Shea, Republican, and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story in the news, behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong, about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. No matter who tries to silence us, about not ending in prayer, but moving to action. Ephesians 2, 5 through 6 says, God made us alive together with Christ and raised us up with him and seated us with him in heavenly places in Christ Jesus. Amen. So, folks, I'm going to forego the national news because we're going to talk a little bit about that as far as elections are concerned. But here's what I do want to bring up to you. We are in a country now where notes on a sermon series about Deuteronomy 20, among other things, can now be a cause for persecution. Now, it's interesting to me that there are 7,383 state legislators spread across 50 states. But because the mainstream media fears you, the American that has woke up, that is living their Christianity beyond the four walls of the church, that is spirit-filled, that not only talks a good game, but walks a good game, that loves the Constitution, loves Jesus, loves the right to bear arms, loves the right to life, that's what they're afraid of. So out of 7,383 state legislators, the mainstream media, not just locally, but nationally and now internationally, apparently Al Jazeera and the Irish Times and some other folks have picked it up, are trying not just to outright lie, but quite literally are trying to silence Christians in America, are trying to silence the portion of the population that voted for Donald Trump. Now, here in this area of Washington State, we've been outspoken. We've been a launching pad for freedom and liberty for a long, long time. And that is why they are coming after all of us. They're coming after yours truly in the name, and but they're coming after all of us. This isn't about one person. This is about all of us. This is about our way of life. It's about our worldview. It's about our beliefs. It's about our culture, our traditions, and our heritage. That's why they are spending so much time, energy, money to do this. And they don't care about the truth. Absolutely do not care about the truth. And what the beautiful part about all of this is people now are waking up and saying, enough. I think we're going to see something happen tonight that's extraordinary. Because people love America, and they are seeing through what is essentially becoming the Pravda of the former Soviet Union, where it's nothing to do with the truth, but an agenda. And if you haven't seen my statement on Facebook, please check it out. If you haven't seen the article in the New American Magazine that just came out today that outlines what's happening with all this, I really strongly urge that you take a look at it. But folks, this country, this state, is not going to be saved by one person or 10. It's going to be saved by all of us working together, standing on the line. For truth, unashamed, unafraid, unwavering. So be strong, be vigilant, vote. That is how we are going to turn this thing around. And you know what? We are already turning it around. We're winning, and they know it. All right, we are going straight into the election analysis now. My guest today, my longtime friend Matt Monroe, an election expert, somebody that just has been watching these things for a very long time, very astute as well on what it takes to win elections, both Democrat and Republican. He's been very, very good over the years. Matt Monroe, thanks for joining me once again on Patriot Radio.
Well, thanks for having me.
All right. Well, let's talk about the national level. Will the country back Donald Trump again?
Well, if you had to pay attention to all the talking heads that you see on cable, as well as non-cable news, the race has been over for months, and the Democrats were going to take over the Senate and the House in a referendum against Trump. So I don't even know why we're here, because they've been talking about this since April.
Right. Right. Well, let's talk a little bit. I mean, how much money is being spent on this? Which way do you think the United States Senate is going to go? And I mean, I know there's been a lot of focus on the Ted Cruz, Beto O'Rourke race, but there are a lot of other races out there that are just, it's astounding the amount of money.
Well, I was opened with a joke there, but the truth is the only poll that matters, and anybody does polling back in before, what, November, is basically trying to do a sham, because you can't do polling before then, because things change, issues change. The best example we have is Judge Kavanaugh. Everything changed after Kavanaugh, which proves the point. But the money in this election has been, I'd say, unprecedented. I think the Cruz race against Robert O'Rourke, or his nickname is Beto, I think it is, that race alone has been over $111 million between the two of them. Beto's been getting funding of over $70 million from around the country and from the Democrat Party, and Cruz raised $40 million for his race for the Senate.
That is, unbelievable, actually. I don't think people understand. I mean, in $40 million, I mean, what else could you do with $40 million? But there are a lot of other interesting races that are being called already at the national level. Looks like in Vermont. And this is a live blog that we're looking at from Fox News, so everybody knows where we're getting the information from. Looks like they're calling the governor race in South Carolina for Henry McMaster. Looks like also they may be calling the race in Virginia for Tim Kaine. And also Bernie Sanders will easily win in Vermont. I don't really think that's super good news in Vermont, but how do you think this is going to play out across the country? What's the general sentiment of folks that are out there right now about what is happening at the national level and this kind of this atmosphere of vitriol that is permeating the country?
Well, I think that's what's part of the problem with the polling. You remember 2016 on election night until about 10 a.m. here in Washington State, we had Hillary Clinton was going to win. There's a 95% chance that Hillary was going to win. We heard this for months. And then after 10, the realization that Trump was going to win after Florida turned, Pennsylvania turned, Michigan turned, then Trump was pretty much assured that he was going to win the whole thing. And nobody could make an assessment why the polls could be so far off. And one theory that I talked on your show back then was that there was so much vitriol that made demonize Trump so much that when people were being polled, they did not want to turn around and admit they voted for Donald Trump. And it sounds silly, but you'd be surprised how often that is. If someone sticks a mic in their face, who'd you vote for? They're going to be on TV or they're going to be on the radio, whatever. They're not going to turn around and try to embarrass himself, embarrass their family, and do what everyone is saying is such a horrible person. But when they get to the ballot and filling it out, they're going to say, yeah, I'm going to vote for that guy. And it turned out to be true. At the time, Trump was pulling crowds of 20,000, 30,000, with 5,000 trying to get in. And then I believe Hillary's opponent back then, Kane, couldn't get 200 to go visit him in some rallies. It was ridiculous. And you're thinking, how can a man who's so despised be so far behind and yet have such high numbers in these rallies? Well, we fast forward to 2018, and you look at it today, Trump is still pulling in these amazing crowds to these rallies, and people, you know, trying to get in. Houston's a prime example. And yet you're saying the Republicans are going to lose, et cetera, et cetera. But part of the problem was Republicans had 40, I believe, House members retire, and that left those seats open up for grabs, which is a harder case to win versus ones with incumbents. And that's part of the problem. And then you run into a history problem that the first midterm from a president is very difficult. They almost always lose seats. There's only been, I believe it's three examples in the last 120 years where that wasn't the case. You had FDR in his first midterm, John F. Kennedy in his first midterm, and George W. in his first midterm.
Do you think that we are going to, at least the Republican side of the aisle, is going to hold the House of Representatives and hold the U.S. Senate? What's your prediction?
Well, my prediction is that going along with this vitriol in this where the polls are inaccurate, and they keep saying that the Democrats are going to capture the House, I'm saying that the polls are so far off even more now, because now you have cases where there's actually been violence against people that are Trump supporters. There's a case where a man's truck was burned because he had a Trump sticker on it. You have members of Trump's staff, as well as U.S. senators, being harassed by people that were anti-Trump, anti-Republican. You have Maxine Waters calling out, go harass these people. And so why would somebody being polled tell anybody that they're supporting Trump?
Right.
And so they're going to be likely, let's say, give it a chance, 50-50, 60, even a 10% chance that they're not going to turn around and tell the truth because they don't know who's polling them. Whereas if you're a Democrat, why wouldn't you say that you're a Democrat? So therefore, the Democrats are going to be polling high and the Republicans are going to be polling low. And it's just the psychology of it. And with that thought in mind, you have to, and then Trump's popularity, and then you have all the amazing amount of Republicans voting early, which is pretty weird and rare. We don't see that often. Usually Republicans vote like on election day. You put all those factors together, I say we're likely to see more of a red wave than a blue wave, and that Republicans will hold the House and will gain in the Senate.
Well, let's take it down to now the Washington state level. Let's talk about the U.S. Senate race. Susan Hutchison, very, very well known, but, you know, going against a longtime incumbent that, although most people do not like her in the Senate, they, you know, it seems like she keeps getting elected. What's your prediction on the U.S. Senate race here in Washington state?
Well, the tough part about that race is that it's the West Side. It's the Seattle and King counties, and it's just population numbers. Over here, Susan Hutchison will win, I believe, hands down, but it's the other side that's going to, if you'll forgive me, trump us. And I believe Maria Cantwell will probably, again, walk away victorious. I don't want to see that, because I think Susan would be a much better senator, because we won't see Maria Cantwell for, what, another 6 years now from today. But Susan Hutchison, I think it's would be a great senator, but I don't think she's going to win. And I'd love to be wrong.
Now, you know, we have record record levels of turnout. We're hovering right now between the 4th, 6th, and 7th legislative districts here in Spokane County, hovering at about 60% turnout on election day. That usually means another 15 to 20%. So we're looking at presidential level turnout for an off year. Do you think that's going to affect a race like that in the Senate here in Washington State?
I don't think it'll be enough because the Democrats are having a good turnout as well. I think still it'll be what it usually is that the Democrat wins the statewide races almost consistently, not just the Senate races, the gubernatorial and all the other Secretary of State and such. And very rare for a Republican to win, and even rarer for one to be from the East Side.
Well, let's talk then about the congressional race. Sandinista Lisa, and I'm sorry, I had to say it. Sandinista Lisa against Kathy McMorris. McMorris, an incumbent, but Lisa Brown, a formidable opponent, former majority leader in the Washington State Senate, but some very troubling ties to some socialist and communist organizations and causes. You know, is it going to, I mean, how is that going to turn out? Because a lot of the Democrats think this is the year to take out Kathy. How do you think it's going to shake down? What's your prediction?
Well, I'm going to talk up Lisa Brown. Lisa Brown has been the best candidate the Democrats have ever produced against Kathy McMorris Rodgers, to be fair. She's very well-educated. She's very experienced. And kudos to the Democrats for putting up a viable candidate this time. That being said, McMorris Rodgers is going to walk away with it. She has the power of the incumbency. She ran a great campaign. The commercials were lethal. Very well done. And Lisa Brown also had very, very good commercials. They both had about $5 million to spend on their elections. I mean, it wasn't as if Lisa got outspent. There's about even on the money. But Kathy is a more appealing candidate. And handled herself well in the debate. I honestly thought Lisa would have cleaned her clock in the debate because she's a PhD and has taught for a living, and that just gives you unbelievable experience. But Kathy did a wonderful job of the debate, I thought. I think that Kathy's still very appealing and has done a wonderful job, has high rank in the office, and I think she'll easily retain her seat.
The Spokesman Review endorsed Kathy. I mean, does the Spokesman Review's endorsement really weigh into elections much anymore? I mean, I really kind of was a little shocked that they didn't endorse Lisa Brown.
Yeah, that was strange. But again, if you'll forgive me, they endorsed a lot of Republicans this time. They endorsed Holy. They endorsed Mike Vols. And they didn't endorse them last time. In fact, they practically apologized for not endorsing them last time. It was very strange. They've had a change of heart. They went and had a fairly conservative endorsements. Except, of course, for you.
Well, we'll get to that hopefully here in a little bit. But let's keep it at the state representative level. The third legislative district has been an enigma. It's been the lone island of liberalism here in eastern Washington, starting with Marcus Riccielli in Taylor. And then also you have – and I really like Colonel Lucas. I really do, against Tim Ormsby. Do they have a chance? Because, you know, Dave Lucas has been – really, really campaigning hard this year. What's your prediction in the third legislative district?
Well, the third one's a tough nut to crack. I think they haven't had a Republican there since before you were born. And I'm not being funny. It's been a long time. And if you look at the numbers on that, it's just solid Democrat. They're one of the poorest districts, if not the poorest district in the state. They were when Lisa Brown came from there, and that's where her legislative seat was. And they still are. And I don't really understand how come they're still voting Democrat. But I believe that the incumbents will walk away with that with a breeze, and I hope I'm wrong. But it's unfortunate, but I don't believe they're going to change.
You know, it's interesting that it remains one of the poorest districts in the entire state of Washington, but the election patterns don't seem to change. What do you think the reason is behind that?
Well, it's like they're in a rut, but there you do see some groups of changing. There was have been a surge among African Americans that are heading towards Republicans. I think Trump is appealing in the sense that he was saying that, you know, you've been here for how many decades and what have they done for you? I'll work with you. And if you look at the unemployment numbers for minorities in this country, they're as low as they've ever been. Thank you, President Trump. And as things that improve, if their lot improves and they see that government can work for them, I could see where he could woo them away and that they start becoming strong Republican supporters.
You know, it's interesting that a lot of union members have been voting conservative for a long time for a lot of reasons, but in particular, the things that those folks do on the weekends, the Democrats were really attacking. For example, the right to bear arms, the ability to ride your ORV or your ATV in places throughout our beautiful northeast part of Washington on the trails and roads that are out there. I'm seeing this trend continue, especially with those folks who work for private sector unions, not public sector, but private sector unions. Do you think that that's really the demographic that Trump has captured, or do you think it's even bigger than that?
I think the unions are heading Trump's way, and Reagan appealed to the unions as well. In fact, Reagan was where the states in the South shifted from blue to red, and he had a hand reaching out to all the great ones do. And but the unions are saying, we want jobs, we want to work, we won't want the government to take care of us. And Trump says, I'll get you jobs. And that was one of his big deals. Jobs, not mobs, is the big catchphrase this season. And he has said what he does and does what he says. He did deliver on that. And my experience, having been in a union or two, and is that they like that type of very, very simple performance that he has done. And I think that he is very appealing to a lot of the working class union folks.
All right. Well, let's move now to the fourth legislative district. So before you comment on this, and Bob McCaslin and Mary May is in position two, and then, of course, my race, where I have not seen this level of vitriol in 10 years. I mean, every year, you know, it's pretty much like clockwork that they hit at you. But this year, you know, getting some fairly unique and ironic threats, you know, one of them was kind of interesting to me. The guy said, you and your Nazi supporters and family and friends should all be rounded up and eliminated from the earth. And I thought I should respond and ask him to reread what he wrote very slowly. I've never seen this before, Matt. What is your take on the effect that that might have in the 4th District in both races? And what is your prediction in my race and in McCaslin's race? And be totally objective.
Oh, I think this is a slam dunk. You guys are going to win. I don't think anything changes. The 4th District's the 4th District. They're a very strong Republican district. And I'll be surprised if your opponents hit into the 40s. I really will. And same with McCaslin. I think it'll be a slam dunk. You guys will both win.
All right. Well, let's go to the 6th legislative district. Well, Jeff Holley running for Senate.
But could I make a comment, though?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's
go
that
ahead.
That vitriol that you just stated, that's not just here. That's around the country. And that is part of this thing where, why would somebody say that they're going to support a Republican? Because of such people that are making statements like that, or they're Nazis, or they're racist, whatever. And then nobody wants to say that they're a Republican when they're getting polled. That's why they're basically, shall we say, lying and saying that they're a Democrat. And that's why the poll numbers are off. That same attitude. And it's only gotten worse since 2016.
So it has only gotten worse. And I hope it doesn't continue the trend, because next cycle will be, you know, it would be unbelievable if this is, you know, just a foretaste. Let's move to the 6th legislative district. Jeff Holley versus Jessa Lewis for the Senate race. Mike Volz versus Kay Murano for the position 1 race. And Dave Wilson, who's run for Congress as a Republican and independent, and now he's running as a Democrat.
The trifecta.
Against Jenny Graham. What's that?
It's the trifecta.
Yeah. You got a hat trick.
Yeah. Right, right. The 6th District, that's where I live, and it's just an outstanding district, outstanding candidates from the Republicans, and I think that each one of them is going to walk away with it. Mike Vols is he the only CPA that's in the legislature?
He may be, yes. I think he is.
He's a master of large budgets. He's been doing them for a good chunk of his career. He's the chief deputy treasurer for Spokane County, and he's one of the finest legislators in that there is in the state. And I think we'd be fools not to elect the man. I'm glad he does it and takes the time. It's not easy being from the east side, driving all the way to the west side so many times, as you well know. Likewise, Jeff Holley, an outstanding legislator. I think he's a credit to Eastern Washington to send both those gentlemen over there. They're amazing, and Jeff is stepping up, going from being a state representative to being a senator, and I think he'll do a fantastic job, like Michael Baumgartner did, who is now going from, this gets a little confusing, he was state senator, and now he's running for county treasurer, where Mike Vols works as well, so it's kind of all mixed, but I think all three are going to win handily. The primary would suggest otherwise, but the primary was a different election than the general. It always is.
And it seems like, too, you know, I mean, the candidates have been out working, but again, it just the turnout, especially conservative turnout, seems to be way, way up.
Yeah, and the other thing that was surprising in that race was all the money that the Democrats mustered up for their candidates. I mean, they outspent the Republicans easily. I think Mike Vols' race, his opponent raised out more money, or actually was donated to him by the PACs and such, she had doubled what he spent. He focused mostly on radio and mailers, and he ran just a very good campaign. And likewise, Jeff decided to go with TV and did some commercials, and they work. And I think he did a fine job. Heard a lot of his stuff on radio, I think that both will win.
Well, let's talk about the county level races. I don't think anything's going to change with the 7th district. There is part of the 7th district in North Spokane County, but it doesn't seem like anything is going to change up there. What's your take?
Oh, I agree completely. I think if the something changed up there, the moon would spin out of control or something. It's like a constant.
Indeed. All right, well, let's move to the county race, the very contentious race between Rob Chase and Mary Cooney. Avista weighing in with $200,000 in ads. Rob, very well loved and very well respected by both sides of the aisle. How do you think that race is going to shake down?
Well, that's a tough one. And what's interesting is they're both Republicans, and they both ran good campaigns. Rob, when he runs a campaign, always a gentleman, this man. He was an outstanding treasurer. Probably the best Spokane County has ever had, and he would make an excellent commissioner. Mary Cooney's already been there, is working in the job, I'm sure she'll be fine. As much as I'd love to see Rob win, I don't believe that he will. I think the money in Mary Cooney, is the powers behind Mary Cooney are going to get her in, as well as all the influence from the ads and such. But Rob, it's a shame to lose him as a public servant, because he's just fantastic.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things that a lot of people had a problem with was Mary Cooney voted for a property tax increase during a year when we saw the historic, quite literally the highest property tax increase in the history of Spokane County, and people thought that was tone deaf. Do you think that's going to have any effect in that race?
I'll be surprised if it does. And again, I want to be wrong. I'd love Rob to win, but I just don't think it's going to happen.
Wow. All right. Let's move next, because I think that, I want to save enough time to get to the initiatives as well, but I want to also go through some of these lesser known positions that people talk about. And Let's start with Baumgartner and Green for county treasurer. How do you think that one's going to go?
Baumgartner all the way. He's a very appealing. He's has great commercials, and he's a good campaigner, and he's very good in debate. I don't think there. I think it's a slam dunk.
Okay, let's move then next to county assessor Leonard Christian versus Tom Conis, two Republicans, both campaigning hard. Leonard Christian had some trouble while he was in the legislature and was not elected after being appointed. How do you think that race is going to turn out? That one seems to be pretty close.
Well, he wasn't only not elected, he came in third in that race, I believe. And I think Diana Wilhite beat him so that she could run, if I remember that campaign. Yep. Well, he was almost despised by the good people of the fourth. That's going to be a tough call. It when the Spokane Valley, who apparently are not big fans of Mr. Christian, so I have to say Tom will probably walk away with that. He has the experience, and he's been working in that office for years, and he knows it inside out. There's no learning curve, and he'll make a very good assessor.
All right, let's talk, and I skipped the county commissioner race. Forgive me for that, Matt, but Robbie Anthony versus Al French. Now, Al French lost in his own commissioner district pretty significantly. Do you think that that's going to carry over to the countywide election?
No, I don't. The Spokane Valley will put French over. It's like clockwork. The race is won in the primary. Once the Republican gets past the primary in Spokane County as a commissioner, the race is over. They win because the Spokane Valley puts them over. And the reason is the Spokane County commissioner's race is unique in the sense that you're elected in your district, but then for the primary, but then the whole county gets to vote on you as commissioner. And that engages a whole different dynamic. And the way that it's just how the voting goes is that there is enough Republicans dominance in the vote Spokane Valley that will put anybody running with an R by their name over the top. So I say it won't be a clean race in the sense that it won't be a 20-point lead, but I'll win.
All right, let's go to County Clerk Tim Fitzgerald versus Michael Kirk.
Fitzgerald's the incumbent, has done a notable job. I think he'll walk away with it.
All right, let's go to Supreme Court Justice position. Go ahead.
Vicki Dalton running unopposed, which is a tragedy.
We can talk about that. I didn't even want to bring it. Go ahead.
I'm just going to say, it's a shame. Nobody should run unopposed. I'm wagging my finger at both parties. Nobody should run unopposed. It's part of our American system. It makes candidates lazy. They begin to think that they own the office. They should always be reminded that you have a limited amount of time. You do a good job, you get to keep your job. If you don't, you're out. And so unopposed always annoys me. And there's a number of these races that are unopposed in this ballot, which is unfortunate.
And, you know, I think that having, you know, the kind of the iron sharp as iron idea, you know, that things are brought up in campaigns, and when it's a competition, then those things get addressed. Well, especially for auditor, where there are some technical things that have been challenged down there with Vicki Dalton under her leadership.
Well, my friend, this is what made America, isn't it? Is competition. This is why we're the greatest nation in the history of the world, because we have competition. If you don't do a good job making an automobile, your competitor will. Henry Ford said you could have any color in the car you wanted as long as it's black. Well, other manufacturers came out with cars with colors and started competing and being successful against Henry Ford. And he learned to paint his cars different colors. That's the beauty of America, is competition. That's the failure, likewise, of communism. There is no competition. You're stuck with what they give you.
And, you know, that kind of is a good segue into the judges. You know, we have a lot of judges that ran unopposed again. And I have people calling all the time complaining about, you know, application of the rules of evidence, you know, that you know, it's been done unfairly and all of these types of things. It just seems like, especially in the judges' races, this is really the most pronounced. And so please comment on that, but also on Supreme Court Justice Position 8, Choi versus Gonzalez.
Judges are the hardest, that school board are the hardest races to crack open. It's just like there's a priesthood with the judges and the lawyers. And unless you're in the business, it's hard to get any information who's a good judge and who isn't. And yet they have sometimes enormous influence on our lives. But they're very, very closed. And outsiders don't seem to be welcome. And the rules for campaigning as a judge are different. They're not allowed to ask for money. And they have different limits on it. It's just they're nonpartisan. And it's very, very difficult and just different in a lot of ways. And I wish it was different. Case in point, the appellate court race. We have Laura Sitaway, who used to be around Spokane. She ran unopposed. And again, I'm anti running unopposed. I think that there should always be somebody running against somebody else who's qualified to do the job.
I think that let's talk about the ones that are contested. Superior Court Judge Position 10, Cronin versus Samblin. Dennis Cronin, very well known among attorneys as being, even though he leans left, very well known, though, for being fair and conscientious about the rules and the law. What do you think about that race? How's that one going to shake down?
The things I've outlined so far on this show don't really come into play here because they're nonpartisan races, and it's I have no real insight on those races at all.
So, and then the other one contested Patrick Johnson versus Randy Brandt. You know, and it seems like Cronin has run a very good campaign, but also Michelle has as well. And you know, if it comes down to money. And it's about even, then it's, you know, who is appealing on issues particularly to the greatest number of folks. And you're right, a lot of people just don't know about judge races. They've gone maybe to We Believe We Vote or some others, but even that sometimes it doesn't tell the whole story. I don't know. I mean, I personally backed Randy Brandt and I backed Dennis Cronin. I know people have different views on that, but it seems, again, like there should be a clear-cut choice, and judges should be able to talk more about their elections instead of just saying, I can't talk about a case I might rule on. They can talk about what they believe, and I think that should be out there more because people really are asking about judges, and it's something that, unfortunately, most people will encounter once in their life is the courtroom.
Well, hopefully not, but yes. You're right.
Right. Well, let's shift back out of the kind of the local races. I want to talk a little bit about I-1631. You've got, you know, this continued push for a carbon tax. The last one got voted down statewide, which I think surprised a lot of people. But there has been a ton of outside money coming into this vote for this measure on whether we should take up carbon taxes. Many people in Eastern Washington believe, hey, look, we should be managing our forests better. That is the greatest solution because out of 92 million tons of CO2 released into the atmosphere, 24 million of it was from catastrophic wildfires. The single greatest thing we could do is manage our forests better. And yet we continue to see year after year these initiatives. How do you think that one is going to end up, I-1631?
Well, if you actually read through it and understand it, there was a commercial that pointed out the fact that I believe Boeing is exempt from it. Some of the major polluters that they're all concerned about carbon coming from are exempt from this. And so I just don't grasp why they would be exempt, yet they're the major polluters from this. If this passes, to me, from my humble perspective, this would be devastating to business in Washington State. And it's a shame that we have to do something and have something as dangerous as this come so close to our lifeline of business in the state. We're a B&O tax state, and business pays a good chunk of our revenue. And anything that's going to turn around and hurt business and make it easier for businesses to go to other states and still do business in Washington State is kind of bad. And what's funny is AIR is no respecter of borders. Isn't that weird? It doesn't really care if it's in Idaho or not. If the pollution is in Idaho and it blows this way, it's irrelevant. I think this is lunacy that they did this, and I'll argue this with anybody. What would it really do if it did pass besides hurt business? And how would it really help the environment? In my humble opinion, it wouldn't. And yet we will be penalized, especially as taxpayers, voters, and citizens, for something that really not will not benefit us that much, if at all.
And I completely agree. And we would get more jobs to rural Washington if we were managing our forests better. I think that's pretty clear.
Oh, agreed. But if you're really going to have a problem, if there really was to the point that we have to have a carbon tax in order because the earth is going to end by 2030 or whatever, then there are no exemptions. And that would be fair. But when you start throwing out exemptions and such, oh, no, we got to let China off. We got to let India off. And that they're trying to do with like the Paris Accord and such. Then you turn around and you think, wait a second, this is really a crisis. Why are we exempting anybody? And that's the problem I have with initiatives like this. Is it going to pass? It comes down to King County and the West Side. Is it going to pass? They will make the call. But I don't think it'll pass over here because we have more sense.
All right. Well, let's move to I-1634. That is no more grocery tax, at least at the local level. Seems to be pretty popular on both sides of the aisle. What do you think on that one?
Well, I think that will pass because you have to vote yes to say you can't do that local jurisdictions. I would not want to trust my Spokane City Council with that kind of power. We already pay too much in taxes as it is. And I was hoping maybe the legislature, hint, hint, would turn around and deal with this and versus leaving it up to the voters. But I think that will probably pass statewide. There is this attitude that we don't want an income tax, and allowing the government to tax willy-nilly, they will. And therefore, we need to turn around and to rein them in now and then. And I think that's on both sides of the state.
All right, I-1639, essentially a gun control bill, preventing access to firearms for self-defense in one particular case. Secondly, where somebody wasn't even a party to a crime, they could be charged for one because somebody got access to a firearm. This is interesting to me because there has been more campaigning on this from the pro-gun side than I have seen in a very, very long time. How do you think that one is going to shape up statewide? Because, of course, once again, there's a lot of out-of-state money coming in to try to weigh in on that race.
Excuse me. I don't believe that's going to pass. The commercial that I heard on that is that 30 seconds, if you're in Seattle in certain neighborhoods, you have 30 seconds. Imagine if you couldn't get to your gun, that's how long it takes the police to get there. Very effective commercial. It made the point. In Eastern Washington, we had an example, but the advertisers didn't for this to defeat this did not use it. But there was a person who was a psycho killer, and I'm not exaggerating, who went to the county fair and escaped. And I'm not exaggerating this at all. And the guy was a certified killer, but he was insane. And then he eluded his handlers, and he was on the loose again. And fortunately, the half-life of his medications kept him from hurting others before they recaptured him. But imagine if this guy, who is a killer, is out, and he could have been anywhere here in Eastern Washington. He had enough time, and you have no way to protect yourself.
Yeah, I mean, what happens then? I mean, this is, I mean, talk about like single mothers particularly. This just is horrific to even think about what could happen to them.
But it could have happened, and that was the whole problem with it. The sheriff, very upset about this, that they never even notified him that they were even doing this practice of taking them to the county fair. He was just, this happened back, oh my goodness, about 10 years ago. But it was a horrible thing. Back east, there was it two or three escaped murderers were roaming around for 6 weeks in New England, and they finally recaptured them. But the whole point is when cases like that happen like that, the police cannot get there fast enough. You are responsible for your own safety. An event comes up like this, and you have, what, a week waiting period to get your firearm? And if you don't have it protected, whatever, it just violates that right to bear arms, to protect your home, protect your family from potential dangers that could happen. And I think,
you know, that issue you talked about actually is personal to me, because it was my piece of legislation that prevented them from taking them on these visitations to the county fair again.
Thank you for that.
Unless they had a court order. Yeah.
And thank you so much for that, Doug, because that was insanity. Why they did that, I have no idea.
Well, let's talk next about I-940. Now, this came through the legislature. This was an initiative of the legislature. There was a huge hullabaloo over how it was voted on in the legislature, and essentially the scheme that was attempted was thrown out by the Washington State Supreme Court. Now it's just an up or down vote. This is an initiative that very clearly makes our law enforcement second-guess decisions and also really makes them open to lawsuits far more so than they are right now. How do you think this one's going to play out?
Well, I heard the at least the commercials over here were effective, and I'm hoping this gets voted down. And again, the West Side will make the call. But it should be voted down because it's just bad legislation.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I think a lot of people are seeing through it. There's a pretty vocal group that is the proponents behind this, but it just seems just way too restrictive on our police officers and our deputies.
Agreed.
All right, well, let's move to there's a few local levies and some other things. How do you think generally the populace is viewing levies right now, especially after the massive property tax increase that they saw and, you know, a tremendous amount of funding going to our public schools? How do you, you know, what is your take on the public and these ongoing asks for money, because it never seems like it's enough?
Yeah, and it's like every other year. But the good news is, and I've been complaining about this in my community many, many times, because usually what they do, they'll do a special election to where they will spend, and I'm not exaggerating this, $300,000 to have an election in like February, when we are required by law to have an election in August and in November. Why are you doing one in February when you have one issue and you could just put it on the ballot in August or November, and then we could just have it and then save the money? When you're asking for money and you're spending money, it's kind of seems illogical. But so they did do it, and I, you know, kudos to them for at least putting it on the November ballot. I think the school district, they're on a building spree, and at least in District 81 for Spokane, and they do nice work. The buildings are gorgeous, but boy, the property taxes are getting higher and higher and higher. And there is going to come a point. Will this be the election where the voter says enough taxes already? But my gut says that they'll probably pass it. The one for the stadium, that they want to build. They want to, I believe there's a choice between putting it in where the old Joe Albee Stadium sits right now, or putting it on the north bank of the river, Riverfront Park. You get to choose which one would you like to see it as an advisory vote. I think people will stick with Joe Albee. What was not brought up in that issue is, and this would be my concern, is on the North Bank, they had some problems with some toxic waste issues. And that was only going to escalate the cost of that. And I would be hesitant to do any construction on the North Bank because of that issue. I'd be rather just redo Joe Albee Stadium if we have to do anything at all anyway.
Well, and I think that that makes sense to a lot of people. And I think just candidly, folks don't mind spending money or having their representatives spend money. But they always ask, is that really necessary? How well thought through is this? And a lot of times, I think folks just say, okay, well, schools, we might just vote for it. Or, okay, it's this, we might vote for it. Because it's not very easy to delve into how that money is exactly being spent, the line items for. In fact, some of it, it's not accounted for except in what are called section items. In other words, just the section of the project, not what specifically under that project, that section it was spent on. And I think folks want to know that. That's one thing I definitely think we could approve here in Washington State.
That sounds like something the legislature could do. Hint, hint, hint.
Hint, hint. All right, well, let's jump back nationally in the last few minutes that we got here. It looks like Bernie Sanders this is the Senate now. Bernie Sanders winning in Vermont. Looks like also you've got some clear races here in South Carolina that have been called already for governor for the Republican there. And then looks like there's a couple others in Virginia. Looks like Tim Kaine is projected to win in Virginia.
He'd be the incumbent, though.
Yeah, he is the incumbent.
Like Bernie Sanders. It's not unexpected.
Yeah. I just wish that it was different. It seems like Virginia has been going left quite a bit lately.
Yeah, it's things are in flux right now. Trump is a force in nature, and things are changing. I never thought I'd see Michigan support him, what they called the Democrat blue wall, where he completely blew it to pieces and won the presidency. And so things are in flux, and you have to look at the man promised jobs, the man promised lower unemployment, and this man delivered. And that's pretty much unheard of in modern politics. And he's done an exceptional job. And just by the numbers. And a lot of people like it. What's funny, I remember during the election, you had our former president saying, how's he going to do that? With a magic wand? I've seen the video. And then 2 years later, the same man is trying to take credit for Trump's work. So just kind of interesting. If it'd be fun to have the media actually support the president when he does well and criticize him when he does things that are foolish. But that's not the case. They criticize him when he does well, and they also criticize him when he does things that are foolish.
So, in the last two – well, yeah. And I would just – if you can impart some wisdom, the last 2 minutes that we got, if you can impart some wisdom on those folks listening, and especially the younger generation – I know that there have been places throughout the country that have seen a 500% increase in youth registration and turnout. I think that number is probably inflated, but be that as it may, what is your message to them, to the younger voters, about how precious this country is?
Learn your history, and not necessarily what you learn from school, but read about the Founding Fathers, and there's some great work. David McCullough did some wonderful biographies about John Adams, he has some work on even Harry Truman and Teddy Roosevelt. And learn about the history of this great nation. We bow to no one when it comes to history as of great people that have made strides, not only made this a great nation, but made the earth a better place. I believe there's a stat that says that the United States is responsible for over half the inventions ever made. And we've been here less than 250 years. And you are the heirs of a great nation. And this responsibility and the legacy is being handed to you. And that's what the vote is. You get to manage how we will manage in the future. And you need to start now and learn what to do. Get involved. You don't have to run for office, but if you want to, look into it. Read up on the issues. Get an idea of how things work and how things are. And be honest with yourself. Don't necessarily believe what people tell you. Research it yourself. Think and learn. Learn what happened in the past. Learn what worked. Learn what failed. And heed that lesson. It's invaluable. And then look at our great history. I can't emphasize that enough. Of the people, the founding of this country, they were giants. People like to pettifog their history and what they did for this nation. But the truth is, without them, where would the world be today? It'd be in chaos. The United States is that one last guiding hope beyond God and Jesus Christ that keeps the world in check. Because otherwise, where would we be?
Yeah, where would we be? Well, Matt Monroe, election expert, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. God bless you, and I'm sure you're going to be glued to the television a little bit later.
This is my Super Bowl, sir.
All right. Take care and be blessed. This is Matt Shea. Thank you, everybody out there, for joining me on Patriot Radio today. I want to make sure, too, if you still haven't voted, you've got time to vote. Turn your ballot in. It's sent to you. If you have any questions, you can go to VoteShea, S-H-E-A.com, and you can check under Solutions for my take on the elections. You can also check out We Believe We Vote for their take as well. May God bless all of you, and may He truly make this generation the greatest one. And may we bless God by keeping America free.